Okay. I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:35 p.m. on Tuesday, February 13th, 2018. Present today, we have Representative Ortiz, Representative Pruitt, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Wilson, Vice Chair Representative Guerra, Co-Chair Representative Seaton, Representative Tilton, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Thompson, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Foster. And Representative Gren has been previously excused from today's meeting. Before we start, just a reminder, if folks could please mute their cell phones. And also, before we begin, I want to remind everyone that today at 4 p.m. there will be a ceremony in this room naming the House Finance Committee room in honor of the late Senator Al Adams. And then there will be a reception following the dedication to be held in the Terry Miller Building. That's in the Legislative Office Building from 5 p.m. to 6:30. So at this meeting, we will be having second hearings on HB 273, which is a bill that extends the Marijuana Control Board, HB 274, a bill that extends the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners, and then HB 275, it extends the termination date for the Board of Massage Therapists. It's my plan to move these bills today, and if it is the will of the committee. Additionally, we plan to hear three more board extension bills, HB 278, which is extending the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers by Representative Josephson, HB 279 to extend the Real Estate Commission by Representative Josephson, and lastly, HB 280 to extend the Board of Marital and Family Therapy, also by Representative Josephson. And it is my intent to have public testimony on these bills, and if it is the will of the committee and time permitting, to also move these bills from House Finance Committee today. So with that, we're going to change up the ordering here just a little bit. I had first up HB 273, which is extend the Marijuana Control Board. We're going to move that to the bottom. And so with that, we'll go straight to HB 274. And that is extending the termination date for the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners. The committee last heard this bill on February 6th. We completed public testimony, and there were no amendments provided to my office. So I'd like to ask at this time that Representative Keto's aide, Ms. Caitlin Ellis, if you could put yourself on the record, and is there anything that you would like to add?
This is Caitlin Ellis through the chair. Again, this is a full extension of the board, 8 years. There were two recommendations in the audit. Both of them have been acknowledged by the board. They agree, and they've already taken steps to implement both of the recommendations.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, let's see here. I just also want to let folks know, also on the line, we have available for any questions, which sounds like there isn't any, but just in case, Alan Levy, Chair of the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Examiners, and Robert Lane from the Alaska Psychological Association. And then also present in the room, we have Chris Curtis from Ledge Audit, Sarah Chambers, Deputy Director of Corporations Professional Licensing. So if there are no questions for any of the experts that we have available, I would entertain a motion. Representative Seaton.
Should get the wrong one here. Thank you, Ms. Chairman. I move HB 274 version 30LS 1184/D from House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Thank you. Do we have any objections? Seeing no objections, HB 274 version 30-LS1184/D for Delta with individual recommendations, and the attached fiscal note is reported out from the House Finance Committee. So with that, let's take a brief at ease, just sign the report, and then we'll move on to HB 275. And House Finance is back on record. The time is currently 1:40 p.m. Next up, we have HB 275. It's a bill that extends the termination date for the Board of Massage Therapists. We last heard this bill on February 6, 2018. My office did receive two amendments. At this time, I'd like to ask Representative Keto's aide, Ms. Crystal Kieneman, to the table. And if you could put yourself on the record and present anything, or if there's anything you'd like to add out. Would also like to note that we're also available for questions. Our the board chair for the massage therapist, David Edward Smith, and in the room we have available for questions also Ms. Chris Curtis from Ledge Audit and Sarah Chambers, deputy. She's there. You are, and deputy director for professional licensing at the corporation. So with that, Ms. Kieneman, do you have anything to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Crystal Kieneman. Again, House Bill 275 extends the board 4 years per Division of Legislative Audit's recommendations, and I'm here for questions or to speak to the amendments if necessary.
Thank you. Do we have any Representative Guerra?
Thank you. Ms. Kieneman, I probably missed this the other day, but this is one of the few boards that has to get fingerprinting. So what is... what is the cost for a licensed massage therapist in terms of licensing fees, and do you have any idea what the fingerprinting costs?
Give me 1 second while I pull that up.
I was told $60 for the fingerprinting with by the members to my left.
Representative Guerra, through the chair. For FY18, the non-refundable application fee for initial licensure is $200. The massage therapy license fee for a biannual license is $290. And the non-refundable fingerprinting processing fee is $60.
Thanks.
Do we have any further questions?
Okay.
No further questions. Let's go ahead and move over. Representative Guttenberg.
Well, I guess I'll take the discussion into the amendments.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. On the amendment process, Representative Seaton, if I could entertain a motion for amendment number one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number one.
Objection for purpose of discussion.
We have an objection, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. This amendment would change the fingerprinting and criminal history requirement to once every 3 years, or three renewals, or every 6 years, instead of every 2 years, which is every time of renewal. The amount of paperwork and all we try to cut down in government, having this board is the only one that requires any renewal of the fingerprinting and background checks, and it requires it every renewal, which seems to be quite a burden on the industry. The fee, processing fee, is $60, but there's also a fingerprinting fee, which varies by location. Anchorage is $30, Homer is $35, and Kenai is $26. So that's for somebody to go when you go in and somebody actually roll your fingerprints onto a card. So there are three other boards that require licenses, but those three boards don't require any renewal and background checks. So we heard in testimony from the board chair that they supported this going from one to three renewals. And so I think that in the element of efficiency of government and taking away unneeded paperwork from members of the boards, then I encourage members to support this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Does the sponsor have a position on this amendment?
Thank you, Representative Foster, members of the committee. I have spoken with Representative Keto regarding this amendment, and we are in opposition to the amendment. There is currently a bill, House Bill 110, that is sitting in House Labor and Commerce that contains this language that should be in your committee early next week.
Thank you, Ms. Kieneman. Are there any questions of the committee on amendment number one? Ms. Representative Ortiz and then Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if there's a bill already in committee, it's my understanding it does the same thing?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, we had been working on ACS to address some of the other issues that came up with this particular licensing board, and that is one of the issues that was rolled into the CS. There was another one that Representative Pruitt had mentioned at the last meeting that was also rolled in. So yes, it is in a currently in a substantive piece of legislation.
So then, follow up. So am I correct in understanding you're opposed to the amendment because it is not as inclusive as the bill?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, we don't oppose the language as presented by Representative Seaton. What we oppose is adding it to the sunset bill. The sponsor believes that running a clean sunset bill through the legislature and addressing substantive issues in a separate piece of legislation would be ideal.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you, and perhaps this is best for the department or whoever wants to answer it. We had a sunset the other day that dealt with an apartment that had fingerprints, and that was an FBI issue. But I'm under the impression that this is the only group that takes more than one or renewals fingerprints every time. And why is that the situation? I mean, why do they require fingerprints the first time, and why do they require them on renewals? And what's the purpose?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, the establishing legislation as it moved through the legislature back in 2014 had the fingerprint requirement for every renewal. That was a policy decision that the legislature made at the time. It was recommended by the board for they wanted that extra bit of kind of check and balance. But that was a policy call that was made by the legislature during that establishment.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Hello?
Check and balance on what? I mean, are they concerned that there's been identity theft? I mean, we don't do this for anybody else. We don't do this for anesthesiologists. We don't do this for, it's my impression, we don't fingerprint most of our boards. We only print a small handful. What is the point to begin with, and what is the point of multiple times? That was a policy call, but what was the purpose of the policy, and what has it accomplished?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, I would direct that question to Dave Edward Smith, the chairman of the board. He may be able to better explain that for you.
Mr. Edward Smith, are you online?
Yes, this is Dave Edward Smith, chair of the Board of Massage Therapists.
Thank you. Yeah, if you can answer the question.
Sure. The massage therapy licensure population is a pretty unique population. One of the uniqueness of this licensure is there's a transient population of massage therapists who work in various states, such as California, Texas, Chicago. And what we're looking to do with these background checks upon renewal is to ensure that we have a triggered fingerprinting, that the fingerprinting triggers a federal background check, which gives us clarity whether or not the applicant has any legal charges that would be considered a crime of moral turpitude according to our regulations. And this has been successful so far, so we have a few prostitution charges that have been caught with these background checks, which have resulted in license denials.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I understand the reason for that now that you're talking about it. I'm just trying to still digest that about the difference between this and others. And so thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. Representative Wilson.
Thank you. And to the chairman, so those background checks, were those initial background checks or were those based on renewals and then those charges were found?
Mr. Edward Smith.
I believe we have a case of a, and this was our first renewal period. I can think of at least one case of a renewal background check that resulted in a crime of moral turpitude.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
And how many, I'm looking right now, how many licenses do you have?
Currently, I think we are nearing 1,200, 11 or so, approximately 1,200.
Thank you. Just a comment on this as we're in this portion of it. I agree with this that we don't do this for anybody else where we make them every, you know, 2 years have to get a background check. And one out of 1,200 seems like a pretty low threshold. I don't know what we'll find out from the other boards, but I don't think I want to find out. I think they'd all be in here probably screaming if we try to make them do it every 2 years. They were a new board. I know they were probably doing a lot of check and balances to make sure that they had all their things covered since they just did. But I didn't know at the time I was here for that legislation that that would have been the only board that we were going to require every time they renewed to do background checks. So, you know, I don't have a problem going to 6 years if it doesn't work. They could always come back, but I think that's a pretty heavy thing that we're putting on this group of people. So I'm in favor of passing this amendment.
Thank you. We got a question from Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Same question of the gentleman online, or a similar question. This is a really roundabout way to get a background check on somebody. You already have one set of fingerprints. Fingerprints, to my knowledge, unless somebody alters them, don't change. And instead of just doing a background check, we require somebody to pay for fingerprints again, fingerprint checks to get a background check. Is just out of curiosity, has anybody ever considered just requiring the state to do a background check without the cost of fingerprinting?
Mr. Edward Smith?
Yes, thanks to the chair. The actual fingerprint card itself and that process is what triggers the federal background check, which is not as thorough as a process of just a state background check. Once again, we are looking to address a significant transient population of therapists in the state of Alaska.
That's good enough. Thanks.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions of the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson?
But isn't the real debate right now, the debate really isn't if it's the right or wrong issue, because it's obviously in another bill, which I do appreciate and respect Representative Keto on that. However, bills don't always make it to the other side in the same kind of fashion. And I guess I would rather know that it's going to go in this bill, which probably has a much better chance of passing over there versus another one, which I hope does, because it has a lot of other fixes in it. But really the debate is whether or not it should be now or later. And since we're kind of in the mood for now, I hope everybody votes yes, and I'm going to remove my objection.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. We have another objection, Representative Pruitt.
No, I'm going to object.
Objection.
And for the very reason that it is in another bill. The reason I pulled an amendment I had last week or 2 weeks ago on APOC was because I was told the substance of the amendment was in another bill. And so if we're going to maintain that, and I think that it's appropriate that we hold that process going forward. So anyways, so I'm just going to keep my objection because of that one piece.
Do we have any further comments? Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, there was another bill that was an entire bill. There was a bill like this, but on the floor of the House last week that sponsor was changed and the bill was withdrawn from the legislature. So the bill itself that was dealing with this has been withdrawn. Going to 3 years has been an amendment put on to another bill, but it is not the sole subject of the other bill. It's just simply the same concept as an amendment. And, you know, it was said that there's another bill that had a very much lower number that has remained in the other committee for a long period of time. I have no security that bill will move from that other committee and will move to us. This is a licensing bill that we have. This is a strictly a licensing issue and a licensing requirement. So it's not like we are going out and putting other substantive elements in here. So I would appreciate the support for moving this to a third renewal, so every 6 years.
Do we have any further comments or questions? Seeing none, the objection is maintained. Representative Pruitt. So with that, if the secretary could please call the roll.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Pruitt?
No.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative Tilton?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
9 yea, 1 nay.
And on a vote of 9 yeas to 1 nay, amendment number 1, which is 30-L.
Mr. Chair.
brief at ease.
Yeah.
Counting.
House Finance back on record. And on a vote of 9 yeas to 1 nay, amendment number 1, which is 30-LS1185/D.2, is adopted. And so let's move over to amendment number 2. Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 2.
And is there an objection? Seeing no objection, Representative Wilson, amendment number 2, which is 30-LS1185/D.3, has been adopted. And so before we entertain a motion to pass out the bill, are there any further questions or comments on the bill itself? Seeing none, Representative Seaton, I would entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HB 275 version 30-LS1185/D from House Finance Committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And is there any objection? Seeing no objection, HB 275, version 30-LS1185/D, as amended with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note, is reported out from House Finance. And we'll take a brief at ease to sign the report. House Finance is back on record, and we will now take up HB 278, which is extending the termination date of the Board of Real Estate Appraisers, and that's by Representative Josephson. It's my intent to hear a public testimony on this bill, and if it is the will of the committee, we will move the bill from House Finance. So at this time, I'd like to bring Representative Josephson's aide, Ms. Megan Holland, to the table, and if you could put yourself on the record and begin with your presentation.
Through the chair, for the record, my name is Megan Holland, staff to Representative Josephson. He sends his apologies. He is unable to be here today due to a scheduling conflict. You have before you House Bill 278, which extends the termination date of the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers. I won't go into much detail. I'll just say that this specific board received a full recommended 8-year extension by legislative audit, and as well as good reviews from federal audits in 2005 and 2007, and we do have people from the department, the industry, the board, and legislative audit here to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Holland. Also, I'd like to note that available for questions, we also have David Derry, the chair of the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers, and Lydia Larson, vice president of the Alaska chapter of the Appraisal Institute. And so with that, does the committee have any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you. We will move over to Chris Curtis, legislative audit. If you could come up and walk us through the sunset audit for the Board of Real Estate Appraisers.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, your state legislative auditor. If you all have a copy of the audit, it is dated June of 2017. This audit includes a background information section on page 3 that describes the regulatory oversight structure of the appraisal industry, which has been set up by the federal government. This includes private entities that set appraisal standards and certification licensing requirements, state licensing boards that, of course, certify and license appraisers, and then federal entities that regulate and monitor the industry. There's a federal appraisal subcommittee that's responsible for monitoring state licensing boards. And this monitoring includes on-site reviews of the state licensing board, as well as the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing, DCBPL. And we put this information in the audit so everyone knows that this board is subject to external oversight, which is outside of the sunset review process. And this external oversight does factor into our recommended term of extension. Page 7 is the report conclusions. We found this board is serving the public's interest by monitoring certificate holders and working to ensure that only qualified individuals practice. We found the board developed regulations to implement federal requirements, improve the real estate industry, and better protect the public. We do have two recommendations. They begin on page 16. First, we recommend DCBPL director continue to improve administrative support to the board. We noted improvements were needed in three areas, and we go through those on page 16. First, we found that three certificate holders had been entered incorrectly into the National Registry. That was corrected upon our notification to the department. We did review five investigative cases, found three of the five had unjustified periods of inactivity. Those ranged from 130 days to 203 days. And then due to staff turnover, DCBPL management could not provide evidence that three of the 11 board meetings held during the audit period had been public noticed. So not significant individually, when considered together, indicate improvements are needed. The second recommendation is on page 17. We recommend DCBPL director, in consultation with the board, should reduce fees to address the surplus. The surplus as of March 2017 was $165,000 approximately. This we expect to be much higher at the end of FY17 since the renewal period is in June. So a fairly large surplus. We did note that the board had asked management on a few occasions to conduct a fee analysis to look at reducing those fees. The fee analysis did not occur due to competing priorities. As a result, the licensees paid a higher than justified fee during the audit period. Other information you may find useful in the report when considering extension, page 11 is the standard schedule of licensing activities, 261 licenses as of the end of March 2017. Your schedule of revenues and expenditures is on page 12, and then the summary of license fees is on page 13. Now, on page 14, the audit notes that the board does plan to move forward with regulating appraisal management companies, and this will expand the board's duties going forward. Despite the increase in their duties, we are recommending an 8-year extension, and that is in recognition that this board is subject to that external oversight. That oversight happens on site. It looks at the board and the division, and it happens at least every other year. Department's response is on page 27. The department concurs with the findings and recommendations. The board's response is on page 29. They also concur with the findings and recommendations. At the bottom of the chair's response on page 31, they do note that they did receive an attorney general's opinion that stated that they would need a statutory change in order to regulate appraisal management companies. We do not agree with that interpretation. On page 33, there's additional audit comments addressing and laying out the explanation of why we believe the authority is already in federal law and state law. It's just laid that out. Certainly clarifying statutes wouldn't hurt, but we believe that that authority already exists in law.
Great. Do we have any questions? Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on page 15, on the findings and recommendations from prior 2013, you addressed both that there have been some improvements, but they didn't quite get the recommendations done, although you didn't think it needed to be rewritten. What gives you the assurance that these two items will be completed by the time this eight-year extension is done?
Through the chair, the two items are two current recommendations.
It says the prior 2013 sunset made two recommendations, so they're actually ones from the last audit in 2013. But in it, because it talks about how they've improved, but they still haven't gotten there. So maybe I'm reading it wrong. Are these current recommendations, or they look to me like they were past recommendations?
Yeah. Every audit, through the chair, every audit will have a summary of prior audit recommendations, and that first one has to do with administrative support. We have a current recommendation about administrative support. It has different findings than the prior sunset audit that led to their recommendation. So they had made improvements. We go through what they had improved. The remaining part of the prior recommendation has to do with their system deficiencies, which they have come out and said, we're going to go ahead and accept this risk. We understand the cost to address the risk in their system would be more costly than justifiable. So that's why that recommendation goes away in the prior audit, yet we have a new recommendation in the current audit.
Follow up? I don't understand who's taking the risk. Is the department taking the risk for something, or are we putting those on this board or getting these licenses under some kind of risk?
Through the chair, this is a system. The remaining part is a system. So they have a investigative case management system that we do evaluate. Anytime we rely on statistics, we have to evaluate the system, look at the controls. Their controls, they did address part of their issues in the past, but they have an issue where all case managers can see everyone's case and be able to enter and mess with everyone's case. There's no controls to prevent limited review. So it should be a business need, should drive someone's access to a system. They don't have that ability to restrict it. Now, management can set controls. They have to balance the cost versus the benefit. They, as a group, have said, well, it's too costly to address that. We're going to accept the risk. I use that term, risk, because that's an audit term. So it's just an internal management that we acknowledge that and where they're at as informative to the legislature. We don't feel it's significant enough to us to reiterate it as part of this audit.
And one other follow-up?
Follow-up?
I'm sorry, I interrupted you on the second one. So you said, again, they've been improving administrative support, but additional improvements are necessary. Could you expound on what other improvements you think that are necessary?
They are reiterated as recommendation number one.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. We've got a question from Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Curtis, I really appreciate the audit report. When you talk about the federal oversight, and you put it pretty much succinct in what their purpose is for what yours is, what is the overlap besides what they're looking at and what you're looking at? Where is an overlap in? Do you look at their report, or do they look at ours?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, we look at theirs, certainly. I highly doubt they look at ours. They have specific laws that they are looking for compliance with, and historically, the division had to get audits every year, or reviews every year, because they hadn't met the standards. They have had improvements. There was some laws that were passed or some regulations implemented that addressed the federal requirements. So now they're on an every other year cycle for review. So we did acknowledge that was an improved procedures. So we absolutely get their reviews to make sure that the division is meeting the federal requirements. But I highly doubt, I don't know for sure, but our focus is with those 11 criteria that you see in the appendices that we're charged to audit against. They have their own set of federal laws they're charged to audit against.
And if I may, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So is there any redundancy between the two? Do they make recommendations the way you do?
Through the chair, all the whole audit function would be auditing against criteria and having recommendations. So it's a similar process with different criteria.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, do we have any further questions for Ms. Curtis? Seeing no questions, thank you. Ms. Sarah Chambers, if you could come up and put yourself on the record and walk the committee through the department's fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. The fiscal note reflects the finite cost of five board members serving in the capacity of the board. If the board were to sunset, the department would pick up the regulatory cost minus the $21,400 that is reflected in current and out years to cover board member attendance at four board meetings per year, public noticing of board meetings, training and conference fees, and per diem for those particular meetings.
Any questions on the fiscal note? Seeing no questions, thank you, Ms. Chambers. Let's move over to public testimony. I'm going to open public testimony, and this is on HB 278. And is there anybody in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, Mr. David Derry, I have you down listed as yes for public testimony. Is that correct?
Yes, this is David Derry, chair of the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers. I am actually available for any questions that you might have. I would just ask for your support in extending the board as recommended in the legislative audit to 2026.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Derry. Ms. Lydia Larson, I also have you down as yes for public testimony, or were you just available for questions as well?
Yes, this is Lydia Larson. I'm available for questions as a representative, as a certified appraiser, and the vice president of the chapter of Alaska.
Great. Thank you.
Institute.
Do we have questions of the committee for either one of them? Seeing none, is there anybody else who would like to testify? Hearing none, we will close public testimony on HB 278. And with that, if there's nothing else to come before the committee on this, I would entertain a motion, Representative Seaton. Briefities. Okay, I'm back on record. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 278-30-LS-1160-D from House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, HB 278 version 30-LS-1160-D with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note is reported out from House Finance Committee, so we will take a brief at ease, sign the report. Finance is back on record, and our next bill up today is HB 279. It's a bill that extends the termination date of the Real Estate Commission. That's also by Representative Josephson. At this time, I'd like to bring up Representative Josephson's aide, Ms. Megan Holland, to the table. If you could, again, put yourself on the record and proceed.
Through the chair, for the record, my name is Megan Holland, staff to Representative Josephson. You have before you House Bill 279, which extends the termination date of the Real Estate Commission for a full eight-year extension as recommended by legislative audit. The Real Estate Commission oversees brokers, associate brokers, and sales licensees. They are responsible for regulating supervisors and licensees and enforcing their requirements through their investigations unit. They currently oversee 567 licensees across the state. And with that, I will make myself available for any questions.
Okay, and also available for questions, we have Tracy Berrickman, Chair of the Real Estate Commission, Sharon Walsh, Executive Administrator of the Real Estate Commission, and Errol Champion, member of the Realtors Association, who I believe is in the room here. And so with that, are there any questions for the sponsor or any of the other folks listed? Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in our packets, there's a letter from a constituent with just concerns. Are there any answers to the concerns that she had? I mean, besides, I know she wants this not, she wants it to sunset, but I mean, just the concerns as far as, are these things that fall underneath this or do they fall somewhere else?
Ms. Holland?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, those concerns, this specific letter was actually addressed in House Labor and Commerce last week. I gave that letter to Tracy Berrickman, the chair of this commission. They reviewed it and they came to the conclusion that this complaint was actually processed, and they found that the substance of the complaint was not under the purview of the commission. So they essentially had issues with something that the commission doesn't actually do, if that makes sense. And if that doesn't completely answer your question, I'd be happy to turn that over to Ms. Berrickman, which I believe is online, who can probably do a better job of answering that.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up?
So I don't want to get into the details because it's kind of a personal issue for them, but was any information, do you know whether any, and maybe it goes to the chair, was any information sent back telling about the findings and if there's an appeals or something, you know, were they given the process? I was just trying to make sure that if it's not underneath the purview, was that person given that information, and then if there's another process that if they don't agree with the decision, that they could go forward with their complaint? Probably the chair.
And our office, has that received anything, Ms. Holland?
Through the chair, I'd love to defer that question to Ms. Berrickman, who can do a much better job of addressing it.
Thank you. Ms. Berrickman, if you are there, if you could put yourself on the record and answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Tracy Berrickman. I'm the chair of the Real Estate Commission. That complainant's issues were addressed. That goes to the investigative process, and that was addressed, and she was notified of the actions that they would have or either did or did not take and the reasons for that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions of the committee? Seeing no further questions, let's move over to Ms. Chris Curtis. If you could come up again and, again, put yourself on the record and proceed with your report.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor. I believe you have a copy of the Sunset Review of the Real Estate Commission dated June of 2017. Report conclusions begin on page 7. We concluded that this commission is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating real estate licensees and offices. The commission monitored licensees, worked to ensure that only qualified individuals practiced in Alaska. Further, we found the commission developed and adopted regulations to improve the real estate industry. We are recommending the legislature extend this commission 8 years. You may notice that this audit covers a relatively short time frame, which is less than 2 years, and that is because our prior sunset audit was issued in July of 2015. The prior sunset audit concluded that the board was not serving the public's interest because it had failed to obtain a master errors and omissions insurance policy. The commission was required by a 2008 law to obtain a master errors and omissions policy and make it available to their licensees. The statute also required the licensees to obtain errors and omissions insurance either through their independent policy or through the umbrella or master policy provided by the board. However, the statutes provided that if the board cannot provide a master policy, none of the licensees were required to have the insurance. The prior audit found that there had been no good explanation of why the board and the division were unable to move forward with procuring this policy. Subsequent to that sunset audit, the board was extended only 2 years, and the statutes were changed to remove the requirement that, they changed the statutes to ensure that all licensees had to obtain the insurance regardless of whether there was a master policy or not. This time around, we found the commission had actively worked with the division to change regulation to help facilitate a successful procurement. We're able to obtain a master policy. The contract was signed in June of 2017, and we recommend an eight-year extension. Page 17 of the audit includes one recommendation. This is a repeat recommendation from the prior audit. In the prior audit, we found that when we tested 36 investigative cases, 29 of them had unjustified periods of inactivity, and those periods ranged from 124 days to 4.5 years. This time around, we found that the division had implemented some improvements. They had put in a case resolution monitoring dashboard to monitor the process. They'd also implemented internal timeliness benchmarks, goals for their investigators. We tested 7 cases this time around. We found 3 did have periods of inactivity, but those periods ranged from 72 to 90, 194 days. So definite signs of improvement, but definitely additional room for improvement. So we again recommend that the chief investigator work to improve oversight to ensure cases are actively investigated. Page 29 is the department's response to the audit. Page 31 is the board's response. And the governor's response is on page 27, all concurred with the conclusions and recommendation.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. We've got a question from Representative Kawasaki.
This actually is probably more of a question directed toward the division. I had a question about the fund balance, and I think it was noted. It was actually noted in your memo that the commission still has an over surplus of about almost $600,000, and before it was $700,000. And I just wanted—I don't know if you're probably not the best person to address how they would address trying to take that down to a smaller amount.
Ms. Chambers, if you could put yourself on the record.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Sarah Chambers, Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. Through the chair, the board licensees just completed renewal in the end of January, and we are continuing to reduce fees in tandem with the Real Estate Commission to make sure that a large surplus does not remain.
And then another question.
Representative Kawasaki.
And if you weren't there, then maybe somebody else can answer. But were you around when they, I think it was 2011, when they suddenly increased the fee and it was a static 300 over and over and over, and suddenly it was doubled the 1 year? I think it was 2011. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, yes. Then through that journey, and that's essentially correct.
And then I guess just to follow up on that, Mr. Chairman, is that so it sounds like this commission is doing much better than it was before, but then is there any reason to believe that we'll have that spike ever again in the future?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, part of the problem that happened, and there were two main problems that happened in 2011. One was the failure of the division to adequately communicate with the commission and licensees, and so the change took everyone by surprise. We've definitely improved in that area. The other is that we've made many improvements to the fee analysis that we utilize in tandem with our boards and commissions to drill down further into those numbers. So we're arriving at better and better numbers, since we have to use the past to predict the future. And that leads me to the third point, which is that we can expect spikes potentially in the future, because there are so many unknown quantities that can play into what statute requires. The primary variable is investigations or appeals of Board or Commission decisions. So sometimes when we see a license denial on an appeal or an investigation that costs upward of $100,000, statute right now requires the licensees to cover that cost. And so that can unpredictably swing the fees upward. So we do try to keep a little bit of a business-wise cushion, but not one so large that it would raise questions such as you've had.
Great. Thank you. And then I have another question.
Representative Kawasaki.
This is just because we have the benefit of seeing several sunsetted commissions here before us. We have The first three are all five-member commissions. This one's a seven-member commission. The fiscal note for operations of the board and travel are exactly the same. Can you explain that? Maybe it's different meetings or number of meetings are different.
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I also noticed that today and believe it's an error in our fiscal note. Appreciate your sharp eyes. And our boards and commissions are doing such a fantastic job, this one in particular, of meeting through video conference and teleconferencing, that I am going to raise this question back to our director, but don't anticipate a change to the fiscal note due to our error.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We've got a question from Representative Guttenberg and then Thompson.
Thank you. Perhaps this Ms. Curtis can answer this one. And thank you. And it deals with the periods of inactivity in cases, 72 to 194 days. I mean, I recognize that's a considerable improvement over the previous report, but you're also recommending an eight-year sunset. So what is the expectation that, I mean, this still seems like a long time for me for inactivity. Is there a conflict between that number and the recommendation? Should there be a six-year or a four-year to see how they're correcting that?
Ms. Curtis?
Through the chair, this is a division function, so it's not really a board function. We're in there every year looking at the division's investigative section, and this is something we continually review, so we don't weigh it very heavily when we're looking at the term of extension. You can see multiple boards that have eight-year extension recommendations but have an issue with their timeliness of their investigations. It doesn't weigh very heavily in changing or lowering their term of extension.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Thompson?
Thank you. My question was the same as Representative Kawasaki's. I noticed that yesterday we had the five-member boards were 21,000 and we had 1 7-member and it was 29,000. I think maybe they were reading it. Five real estate brokers are on the board plus two public members. So I think they missed two people when they were figuring this. Is it necessary for us to get a corrected fiscal note before this goes to the floor or not? I don't know. But that was my question. Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification, we can count on a revised fiscal note coming forward.
Ms. Chambers?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that's a matter I'll have to discuss with our division director.
Take a brief at ease. Finance back on record. Representative Thompson, did you have anything further on that?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Chambers, would you mind walking the committee through the department's fiscal notes? Officially, I guess we've talked about it, but.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, of course. This real estate commission is structured similarly to our other boards and commissions, so the fiscal note represents the additional expenses of the commission, technically minus two of them, and it would provide the authority for $21,400 for board members to attend four statutorily required meetings per year, the advertising of public notice of those meetings, any training, conference, or per diem that would pertain to those meetings as well. And if the commission were to be sunset, the department would take over all licensing functions.
Thank you. Does the committee have any questions for Ms. Curtis or Ms. Chambers? Seeing none, thank you. And with that, we will open up public testimony on HB 279. And do we have anybody in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, do we have anybody online who would like to testify? I don't see anybody on my list. Just want to verify. Nobody? Okay, so public testimony for HB 279 is now closed. And with that,
we have brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 2:30 p.m. And what we will do is set HB 279 aside and address the fiscal issue that we have. We can bring it back tomorrow, and we only have one bill up tomorrow, so we should be able to move through that quickly. So with that, let us move over to HB 280. And that extends the termination date of the Board of Marital and Family Therapy by Representative Josephson. So at this time, if we could have Ms. Megan Holland come to the table. And again, if you could put yourself on the record since we're dealing with a brand new bill here and go ahead and proceed with your presentation.
Through the chair, for the record, my name is Megan Holland, staff to Representative Josephson. You have before you today House Bill 280, which extends the termination date of the Board of Marital and Family Therapy for a full eight-year extension as recommended by legislative audit. This board regulates and licenses therapists and approves supervisors across the state. They currently oversee 85 licensees. And with that, I will make myself available for any questions.
Great, thank you. Also available for questions online, Dorothea Goddard Aguero, Chair of the Board of Marital and Family Therapy, is available. And do we have any questions for the sponsor or folks online? Representative Wilson?
Hey, Mr. Chair, so the person online, part of the recommendations in 2013 was regulations that had to do with telehealth, and it says that you're in the process of writing them. Do you have an anticipated date on when you think they may be done?
Ms. Aguero, if you're online, if
yes.
You could put yourself on the record.
Thank you. We have submitted a draft to the Department of Law, and we're awaiting comments and for those to be sent back to the board for revisions. But we had submitted our first draft, I believe it was in the summer. That was our first draft.
I'm sorry, Ms.
And so as far as a predicted date, I think it's too early to tell on that.
And Ms. Aguero, if you could just put your name and the position or your affiliation on the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Dorothea Goddard Aguero. I'm the chair of the Marital and Family Therapy Board.
Great, thank you. Thank
you. And I'm a public member.
Thank you very much. And do we have any further questions of the committee? Seeing no further questions, thank you. We will bring up Ms. Chris Curtis from Ledge Audit. And again, a new bill, so if you could put yourself on the record again.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor. Copy of the audit in front of you, dated May 2017. Report conclusions begin on page 3. We did conclude that this board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing marital and family therapists and marital and family therapy supervisors. The board did monitor licensees, work to ensure that only qualified individuals practiced, and we found that the board actively developed and adopted regulations to improve the industry. We recommend the board be extended 8 years. There are no recommendations as part of the audit. There is the standard licensing activity and financial information. The license schedule of licensing activity is on page 6, and has already been mentioned, there were 85 active licensees at the end of January 2017. So this is one of those boards that have just a few licensees. The schedule of revenues and expenditures is on page 8. shows a surplus of just over 68,000 as of March 31st. So you can see that they have been able to maintain a surplus over the last few years despite their small number of licensees. And the schedule of license fees is on page 7. Page 19 is the response from Office of the Governor. 21 is the department's response. 23 is the board's response. They all agree that the board is serving the public's interest and should be extended. Through the chair, in light of Representative Wilson's question, all of the mental health boards, social work examiners, marital family therapists, professional counselors, board of psychologists, we did address telehealth. We felt it was an issue. We wanted to look at it across all the four mental health boards. So all the audits do provide an explanation of where they're at in developing regulations. We thought that was important. With the passage of, I believe, SB 74, there were requirements put on these boards to develop telehealth regulations, which has been an excellent incentive. For this board specifically, it had been one of the reasons why we recommended only a four-year extension last time, because they had been talking about it for years and years, but they had not been able to move forward. And this time around, we found that this board also had not been able to move forward, even after the last sunset audit, until SB 74 was passed. And so with that incentive, they were able to draft. The drafting took quite a bit of time, but they did end up at February 2017 meeting approving some of the more pertinent and the more important of the regulations and move those forward. We also found that the department is having a regulation backlog. SB 74, all of these regulations were required. We did look at how they were handling the backlog. We found that they were prioritizing, you know, the most like public health and safety, those things ahead of other things. So they were appropriately prioritizing that regulation backlog.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on page, nine, the partially addressed on the risk is what we talked about earlier, that anybody could get into the case, not necessarily just because not just the investigator, and, and it has to do with the program costs compared to the risk.
Through the chair, absolutely.
Thank you.
Do you have any further questions for Ms. Curtis? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Chambers. If you could come up again and put yourself on the record and walk the committee through the fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Sarah Chambers, Deputy Director, Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. And the fiscal note for this five-member board is $21,400 to cover the travel for their statutorily required board meetings, advertising and public notice of those meetings, training and conference fees, and per diem for board members during that time. And should the board be sunset, the department would take over the licensing functions.
Thank you. Any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you, Ms. Chambers. And so we will move over to public testimony on HB 280. Public testimony is now open. And is there anybody in the room here who would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anybody online who would like to testify? And I don't believe there is anybody. So with that, we'll close public testimony on HB 280. And is there anything else before we entertain a motion? Seeing none, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 280, version 30LS1162-D, House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal.
Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, HB 280 version 30-LS1162-D with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note is reported out from House Finance, and we will take a brief at ease to sign the report. Finance is back on record at 2:39 p.m. The last bill that we have for us today is HB 273. It's a bill that extends the termination date for the Marijuana Control Board. The committee last heard this bill on February 6th. We completed public testimony and there were no amendments provided to my office. So at this time, I'd ask Representative Kito's aide, Crystal Kieneman, to come to the table. And if you could put yourself on the record again. And also, just to note, available for questions we have online, Erica McConnell, the Alaska Marijuana Control Board, a director, Mark Springer of the Marijuana Control Board, present in the room. Let's see here. We've got normal folks. So with that, Ms. Kieneman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, again, my name is Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Kito. House Bill 273 extends the Marijuana Control Board 6 years. And, you know, as you mentioned, Director McConnell is online, and I believe in members' packets there should be a letter that was sent from Director McConnell regarding some of the questions that were asked at the last hearing.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, I was kind of disappointed that we didn't have the ABC board in front of us Monday. I know it didn't get out of committee, so it wasn't anybody's fault, but I had a lot of trouble trying to figure out how they worked together and what the costs were. And since, you know, we seem to have a lot of boards have gone through, is there any way that we can wait on this particular board so that we can have that discussion with both boards to understand how they utilize each other's services? It just was very confusing on all that, and I don't know how we get all the answers without kind of, you know, not combining the bills but having that discussion with the director on both and how, whether that's working and whether or not we're going to be able to get the funds through this to be able to pay for this board, since most of it's been general funds up to this moment. I mean, it's your call, but I don't feel like I've gotten the answers to a lot of those, and I don't think they're doing anything wrong, and I don't have a problem necessarily with it. I just would like to better understand how the two boards are separate but together.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Are there any comments on that? I'd like to get some input, and then we'll figure out where we want to go with this. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd agree with my colleague to the right that there are some questions that linger. When AMCO was created, it was sort of as an efficiency tool, I think, between the board of the Marijuana Control Board and the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. And I think there's some things that are worked that need to be worked out. And I think director's doing a good job doing that, but I guess having her before the committee seems like a practical question, along with ABC at the same time.
Thank you, Representative Kawasaki. Ms. Kieneman, do you have any input on that? And then I'll go to some of the folks who are online.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I don't think that we would have an objection to that. I do know, as Representative Kito is chair of the Labor and Commerce Committee, my understanding is that they are planning on moving the alcohol board bill. Make sure I get all my boards straight. The alcohol board out of committee on Wednesday, so it should be in your purview shortly.
And is there anybody online? Ms. McConnell or Mr. Emmett, I guess, do you have any comments on that? Yeah. Hearing none, Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it your intention to hold this bill over then?
It is my intention to hold this bill.
Okay. Maybe while we're on the record, then I could have a couple questions, and then when director and board members come before us, we can hear answers.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first question has to do with the original legislation that created the Marijuana Control Board, and that the office was supposed to recoup costs in regulating the industry through fees. I want to hear how that's done, since basically we had to put general fund in at the beginning just to get it stood up. Secondly, I just wanted to hear just a little bit more analysis on how the licensing side of the Marijuana Control Board applications are going. Is there enough staff currently there to handle the work? And since it's an unanticipated but definitely growing industry, I just wondered if they can provide us with information on that. Because I've heard from a couple people that say that they're trying to get in their board packets before the April meeting, but are having trouble getting the licensure done at the office. And then the third thing is just I think, like Representative Wilson mentioned, how the enforcement is dealt with between the one AMCO that does alcohol and then one that does marijuana, and how that is split internally, and who makes those decisions, and how that's staffed up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kawasaki. The questions are noted and on the record, and so if folks could, I guess, think about those between now and our next meeting on this, and maybe my staff, if we can make sure that folks are also aware of the questions. Do we have any further comments or questions on this bill? Seeing none, we will hold over HB 273. And so with that, is there anything else to come before the committee?
Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
So, and maybe we're seeing this more because we're seeing so many boards all together at one time, but if we have time, I'd like to have the department at some point tell us whether or not they're able to really recoup the cost from all these boards, because a lot of the audits are showing that many of the deficiencies are from the department. And I don't know if that's because everybody's trying to keep the fiscal notes as low as they can, but we have a lot of boards. And so with the changeover, with investigations, because I don't want to see something like we just discussed that happened to the real estate board where all of a sudden they doubled, because investigations can be very expensive, especially if they go to court. But I just want to make sure we're not shortchanging the department, and if so, how we do that, since they're all supposed to be paid, you know, by the boards, but there's a lot of them.
Great. And Ms. Pearson, if you could make a note of that, and we will work towards getting some answers at our next meeting. So, Representative Guerra?
Yeah, I guess if, now that we're adding questions for the next hearing, I would like a response as to why fees can't cover the cost of operation this coming fiscal year, why it's going to be another 2 years before fees cover the cost of operation. And given the state's fiscal crisis, I think that's, if we're going to address other issues, I'd like to see that one addressed.
Representative Wilson.
And with that, I don't know whether it's statute or not, but on audits, why are audits counted as something the legislature takes care of versus, I mean, if you're supposed to cover all the costs that are incurred by the board, it just seems to me that maybe the boards will be more serious about some of the recommendations if they know the audit, because just for the one that I asked last time, it was $40,000 for an audit, which is pretty substantial, especially if it's a small board. But I'd like to know why we don't utilize it. Well, no, I mean, I just want to know why we don't charge it back. Oh, well, maybe we have the answer here.
Ms. Curtis, would you like to come up and and since we're on another new bill, Ms. Curtis, if you could also put yourself on the record again.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor, and I put some thought into the memo I sent. It was just a quick little memo about the number of hours that went into that particular, I don't even remember which board it was, but in our billable rate. I should have explained also that most of our staff's work is for this single audit and CAFR audit. So we need the number of positions we need in order to get that job done. When we're not doing that work, we use our resources for, number one, any other audits that are statutorily required, sunsets. And then if we have resources available, we will do the audit requests that are approved by the LBNA committee. So while I do say that this is the number of hours and this is how much it costs to do an audit, it was just the use of our resources at that time. If we weren't doing that, we would have been doing a special audit or something else. So if there is no additional cost, I just want to put that on the record, to our agency, we would still need the number of positions in order to get our single audit and our CAFR audit done. And then we use our excess resources during those off months to do the sunsets. And then, now if we weren't doing sunsets, we could do more. It's an opportunity cost, really. We could do other special audits, performance audits, or special topics that you want to see looked at outside of the sunset process. But it's really an opportunity cost, not necessarily additional general funds to do the sunsets.
Representative Wilson?
First of all, I'm not looking to cut your budget. That was not why I was asking the question.
Just saying.
But the concern is that it was my understanding that whatever goes to the board, we're supposed to recoup those costs. And audits are something that's part of the requirement when you have a board. And we're not being able to do some of the performance audits now because we don't have the funds to do that. And maybe that's because we're busy paying for all these sunset ones. So I was just trying to find out whether or not it's a statute or regulation or we've just always done it that way. And if we've just always done it that way, to me, the statute says if we're supposed to make sure that boards are paying all their expenses, that should be one of those that I think we need to have a discussion on. And then maybe we could do some of these other special audits for whatever reason we need them or the performance ones with the leftover funds. So it's not that I think we don't need less auditors. I just want to make sure that we're treating everything fairly.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Curtis. Our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, Wednesday, February 14th at 1:30 p.m. And at that meeting, we will hear HB 240, which is the pharmacy benefits managers, and then the other bill that we were pushing to tomorrow. Minutes back in record. So we will be hearing tomorrow both HB 240, which is pharmacy benefits managers, and HB 279, which is the extension of the real estate commission. So with that, we will be adjourned at 2:51 p.m. Thank you.